Russian President Vladimir Putin formally annexed parts of Ukraine. How will this affect the war moving forward?
I think there are two implications. The first is that it makes a final settlement that much more difficult. The other thing is a question about whether this incorporation will include these territories in Russia's nuclear umbrella.
Plus, residents share stories of living in Russian-occupied Izum for nearly 6 months.
Most of the city has been destroyed. Death is in the air. There are signs of torture and scenes of grief. Traumatized residents say they cannot believe the horror is over.
Today is Friday, September 30th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Miller. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday vowed to defend Russia's homeland and values in a defiant speech from the Kremlin, in which he announced Russia was annexing four regions from Ukraine and said that the West feared Russian culture. Putin said countries and nations understand that politics built on the exceptionalism of anyone and suppression of other cultures and nations is illegal, and the destruction of the Western homogeny is underway and irreversible. The Russian leader also said they were brought to a battlefield by fate and history, and that it is a battlefield for the nation, for the greater historical Russia. Putin presented a long list of grievances against the West, and he accused the United States and its allies of waging a hybrid war against Russia and the separatist administrations it backed in eastern Ukraine. He said that the West had broken its promises to Russia and had no moral right to talk about democracy, and that the countries of the West were acting as the imperial states that they have always been. The United States announced new sanctions against Russia, imposing what it calls, quote, swift and severe costs on Russia for its fraudulent and unlawful annexation of regions of Ukraine, end quote. The Department of the Treasury sanctioned 14 international suppliers for supporting Russia's military supply chains. The Treasury Department is also designating 109 additional state Duma members, as well as 169 members of the Federation Council of the Federal Assembly of the Russian Federation. Additionally, the Treasury Secretary is sanctioning members of Russia's central bank, the wife and two adult children of Russia's prime minister, as well as the wife and adult children of Russia's defense minister. The State Department also announced new visa restrictions on more than 900 people, and the Commerce Department added 57 entries into the entity list, which is a trade restriction list. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has said numerous times that Kyiv will not accept Russia annexing more of its land. And as we heard on Thursday's program, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said such actions violated the United Nations Charter. On Friday, Zelensky convened a meeting of his Security Council and announced on Twitter Ukraine had applied for membership in NATO. Joining us with the latest from the Ukrainian capital is Anna Chernikova.
President Zelensky actually announced that Ukraine will submit NATO application, and it will be an application that will include the fast procedure of joining, something similar that seen previously from Finland and Sweden. Also, President Zelensky said, I will quote, "It is obviously that it is impossible to agree on coexistence on equal and fair terms with this Russian president. He does not know what dignity and honesty are. Therefore, we are ready for a dialogue with Russia, but already with another president of Russia," end of quote. So basically, President Zelensky just announced officially and confirmed once again that after this annexation announcement by Russian side, by President Putin, no negotiation is possible from now on with Russia, at least with while Putin is a president of this country. President Zelensky mentioned that all these announcements by Russian side would not change anything for Ukraine. Ukraine will continue to defend and liberate its territories. Also, what President Zelensky mentioned, that actually the National Security Council has decided to apply sanctions to significant individuals and legal entities of the Russian Federation on the territory of Ukraine. Ukrainian parliament will vote in the nearest future, and basically so all the assets of Russian businesses would be nationalized by the Ukrainian government.
Anna, thank you very much for that update. I did want to turn our attention to the news that's coming out of the Zaporizhia region, where an apparent missile strike has killed more than 20 civilians. Anna, what do we know about that?
Yes, a truly terrible event that happened today very early in the morning at around 7 a.m. A column of civilian cars that was heading to the occupied territory of Zaporizhia. So people were heading there to bring some stuff and to take people, to take their relatives from the occupied territory. So basically to meet their relative there and to bring some stuff to them. They were heading from the city of Zaporizhia, and at 7 o'clock in the morning, Russian forces shelled this column. So according to President Zelensky, it was at least 16 missiles fired at Zaporizhia this morning. For the moment, we know that a number of victims is around 25 people, and around 74 people are injured, and this also includes children. Unfortunately, these numbers could rise, and we will continue, of course, to keep an eye on this, but this is a truly a big tragedy for Ukraine, and today and tomorrow it will be a day of remembrance for these people who suffered in this tragedy and who died in this tragedy.
Anna Chernikova reports for VOA from Kyiv, Ukraine, and she'll be back later in the program with a special report. In Brussels, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg spoke to reporters condemning Russia's actions.
NATO allies do not and will not recognize any of this territory as part of Russia. We call on all states to reject Russia's blatant attempts at territorial conquest. These lands are Ukraine. Donetsk is Ukraine. Luhansk is Ukraine. Kherson is Ukraine. Zaporizhia is Ukraine, just like Crimea is Ukraine. This is the second time Russia has taken Ukrainian territory by force. But it does not change the nature of the conflict. This remains Russia's brutal war of aggression against Ukraine. And it does not change our commitment to support Ukraine.
Following his opening statement, Stoltenberg answered a few questions, and the first of which came from the news agency of Ukraine.
My question is, NATO ready to consider that kind of applications? And the second part of the question, is it possible to consider the speedy procedure for that kind of membership, like it was done for Sweden and Finland? Thank you so much.
Every democracy in Europe has the right to apply for NATO membership, and NATO allies respect that right. And we have stated again and again that NATO's door remains open, and we have demonstrated that over the last years. NATO allies, when they met at the NATO summit in Madrid, stated also very clearly that we support Ukraine's right to choose its own path, to decide what kind of security arrangements it wants to be part of. Then a decision on membership, of course, has to be taken by all 30 allies, and we take these decisions by consensus. Our focus now is on providing immediate support to Ukraine, to help Ukraine defend itself against the Russian brutal invasion, and then that's the main focus and the main effort of NATO allies as we speak.
Mark Kansian is a senior advisor with the Center for Strategic and International Studies International Security Program. I caught up with him shortly after Putin gave his speech and asked what the practical implications his actions have for the seven-month-old conflict.
I think there are two implications. The first is that it makes a final settlement that much more difficult, with Russia claiming that this is part of their homeland and Ukraine claiming it's part of theirs. That makes it more difficult to find some common ground. The other thing is a question about whether this incorporation will include these territories in Russia's nuclear umbrella. Russia has been rattling its nuclear saber from the beginning of the war and before the war began. And its two red lines have been, first, that NATO troops don't enter Ukraine and confront Russian troops directly. And the second has been that Ukraine and NATO don't strike the Russian homeland. People have speculated whether this incorporation will now extend that umbrella over these new territories, which of course make a Ukrainian counteroffensive that much more difficult. At this point, it doesn't look like that's the case. In Putin's speech on September 21st, he did not include these territories or hint that he was going to extend the nuclear umbrella to these territories, and he had the opportunity to do that because he talked about the referendum. We'll see in the next couple of days when he makes some speech formally including them, whether he does take this step. It would be an extremely dangerous step if he did, although, as I say, it's unlikely. The one exception here is Crimea, because in Putin's speech, he does talk about Crimea being Russian territory, and then presumably this nuclear umbrella would cover Crimea. Now, it clearly doesn't mean that any strikes on Crimea would cause a nuclear response. Ukraine has been using various mechanisms to attack air bases and depots on Crimea, but it might complicate planning for an eventual invasion of Crimea.
Mark, you mentioned Putin taking an extra step to extend Russia's nuclear umbrella to include these new territories. In the past, and in his speech on Friday, Putin said that he would use every means possible to protect these areas, to protect Russia, and even alluded to the United States using nuclear weapons in World War II. So in your opinion, what must Putin do to signal that he's taking that extra step to extend the nuclear umbrella?
If he were going to use nuclear weapons, there would be a couple of things that we would see beforehand. First, of course, they would have to take the weapons out of storage, where they're kept during peacetime. We would probably see that. It would put the launch units on alert. He might even alert his strategic nuclear forces, although that's not necessarily the case. But the other thing is that they would certainly take some steps to prepare the ground forces in the region, giving them training, giving them protective equipment, and we would see that also. Fortunately, so far, we've not seen any of that. So I think the United States and NATO are hopeful that this red line only applies to Russia proper. It doesn't extend beyond that.
Mark, you mentioned that finding a diplomatic solution is even harder now that Russia has taken this step to annex these four areas. But prior to this, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that the war would only end with Ukraine taking back all of its territory, not only these areas, but also the Crimean Peninsula, which Russia annexed in 2014. So these two sides are diametrically opposed. How is it, in your opinion, that an off-ramp to peace can be achieved?
Unfortunately, right now, there doesn't seem to be any diplomatic off-ramp. There doesn't seem to be any common territory that they could build on to produce some sort of negotiated settlement. Unfortunately, when you look at the history of these things, the wars tend to end when one side is exhausted. And that takes a lot of time, a lot of attrition, you know, a lot of blood and resources. That seems to be where we're heading. It's possible we could see some sort of ceasefire for a short period of time, but in terms of a permanent settlement, that doesn't seem to be on the books.
What do you see as perhaps the implications for Putin himself personally? Because this week he did have to acknowledge that his call-up of some 300,000 in his partial mobilization, that there were some complications with it. And we've seen the protests, we've seen the people fleeing. So what does this mean for Putin?
Well, both the partial mobilization and the annexation are statements by Putin and the Russian regime that they are not giving up, that they are moving ahead. They had several options when faced with the Ukrainian counteroffensive, which was unexpectedly successful. They might have just hunkered down, but my suspicion is that the generals told Putin that they didn't have enough military capability to hang on to what they had conquered, that they needed to do something. They might have used nuclear weapons, but clearly they did not, fortunately. They might have sought out some sort of negotiated settlement, despite the fact that there doesn't seem to be common territory. Russia would have to give up an awful lot to get a settlement. Instead, Putin opted for these two steps, the partial mobilization and the annexation.
What about concerns for either NATO or Europe?
I don't think it changes the way the U.S. and Europe look at the conflict. For a long time, it's been clear that this was going to be a long conflict, that support to Ukraine had to continue for many months, maybe even years, that there was not any common ground for a negotiated settlement, so there was very little hope there. So I don't think that I don't think that there's much change for the U.S. in Europe. It does reinforce what people had seen before. This is going to go on for quite some time.
That's the CSIS International Security Program Senior Advisor, Mark Kansian. The United Nations Security Council is also scheduled to meet later on Friday about the ongoing situation in Ukraine, as well as threats to international peace and security. Visit voanews.com/flashpoint for even more updates on the war throughout the day. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. The United States has warned Russia that using nuclear weapons in its invasion of Ukraine would trigger extraordinary consequences. Russian President Vladimir Putin said last week that if Russia is threatened, that he is prepared to use all the means available to him, referring to weapons of mass destruction. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain continues our coverage.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has threatened to defend these newly annexed territories by all means available, alarming officials in the West. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said this week, if Russia used a nuclear weapon against Ukraine, the ramifications would be severe and catastrophic.
The point that we have made both publicly and privately to the Russians is that the consequences would be real and they would be extraordinary.
Price was asked if these severe consequences would be triggered if Russia were to use a small tactical nuclear weapon against Ukraine.
The use of any nuclear weapons in this conflict would carry those consequences.
On Thursday, Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal and Republican Senator Lindsey Graham introduced legislation that would require cutting off economic and military aid to any country that recognizes what they termed Putin's illegal annexation of four regions of Ukraine. Graham had this to say about Putin's nuclear threat.
The use of a nuclear weapon by Russia in Ukraine would be an attack on NATO itself. The radiation would not be confined to Ukraine. You would be irradiating parts of Europe that are under the NATO banner. So if that day ever come, and I hope and pray it doesn't, that should be considered by NATO writ large, the United States, as an attack by Russia on NATO itself.
Catholic University's Michael Kimmage, an expert in U.S.-Russia relations, tells VOA it is impossible to know whether Putin is truly considering the use of nuclear weapons.
It would be an enormous step for Russia to take and would change its image, perhaps irretrievably, in the international stage. It's unclear whether it would lead to any different military results. And of course, it could induce Putin's opponents on the other side, including the United States, to escalate.
Experts say Putin's major military mobilization has already upset and angered many Russians across the country, with the war hitting home. At least 200,000 Russians have fled the country since the conscription order was announced, heading across the border to Kazakhstan, Georgia, Finland, and Mongolia. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Although the European Union has agreed to stop using Russian oil and gas, European member states are still importing nuclear fuel from Russia. From the Associated Press, Karen Chamas reports.
Much to the disappointment of Ukraine's government and environmental activists, EU member states are still trading uranium supplies with Russia. Environmental group Greenpeace has denounced regular shipments of uranium between Russia and France. The group say the ongoing trade of nuclear fuel is financing the war in Ukraine and extending Europe's energy dependence. The EU itself did not propose sanctions on Russia's nuclear sector in its latest sanctions package. However, Ukraine is pushing for European sanctions, with authorities arguing that all energy trade, including uranium, is used to finance Russia's war in Ukraine. I'm Karen Chamas.
And finally, we're joined once more by Anna Chernikova, who recently visited residents in the Ukrainian city of Izum. Now, that's located just 20 kilometers away from the front line of the ongoing war. Ukrainian officials say that the recaptured city has endured nearly 500 airstrikes and that 90% of it has been destroyed. Those living there say that they are determined to get back to a more normal life despite the horrors that they experienced during 6 months of Russian occupation.
Months of Russian occupation has left the Ukrainian city of Izum in the Kharkiv region deeply scarred. Most of the city has been destroyed. Death is in the air. There are signs of torture and scenes of grief. Traumatized residents say they cannot believe the horror is over. Ukrainian forces liberated the city on September 10th. Investigators say they found mass graves and torture rooms. Izum's population has dropped from 50,000 before the Russian invasion to about 10,000, according to official numbers. Andriy is among those who stayed. He sheltered over 60 people in the basement of his workplace. Andriy says the same 1840 cultural heritage building served as a shelter for Izum residents during World War II.
We had terrible shelling here. Terrible. You can see for yourself. We survived here, but to be honest, we barely survived. It was terrible. It was very scary. It was dangerous.
Andriy says Russian soldiers undressed him in this yard to check him for tattoos of Ukrainian national symbols. Some of the women in the shelter were arrested for calling Russian soldiers orcs in messages to friends, a reference to the monstrous fighters in J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings novels. Then, in September, soldiers appeared wearing Ukrainian army uniform.
After these 6 months that we were here under our liberators, a military uniform, you know, causes such a reaction. These are ours, ours. Honestly, there was a lump in my throat. There were tears.
Have you been waiting for them?
Yes, I don't want to show many emotions. We were happy, honestly.
It will be a long time before the city heals.
Izum in Kharkiv region was under Russian occupation for almost 6 months, according to the Ukrainian officials. Since the full-scale Russian invasion, the city suffered almost 500 airstrikes, which is more than any other city in Ukraine. 90% of the city itself is destroyed. Local authorities predict over 1,000 civilian victims. Locals are yet to recover from all the horror they've experienced during this long month's Russian occupation, but they are determined to get the normal life back to their home. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Izum, Ukraine.
And that's going to do it for us this week. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.